that he just left it. Okay, and then I'll talk about the some relevant materials where the nematicity may apply, which include high temperature cuprate as well as the ruthenate of the bilayer 327. And then I will discuss briefly some open questions. Okay, so begins with the terminology, nematicity. This is not probably familiar to most of you, so I was thinking about putting under Google and see what happens. It says, did you mean fumaticity? So apparently it's nothing that familiar, so I was thinking, okay, I should register this terminology under Wikipedia or something. But as you know, well, from the liquid crystal, this is nothing unfamiliar, because in a liquid crystal, that it has the synaptic phase, which is basically identified or characterized by the position and orientation of the cigar-type molecules. And as you lower the temperature, the position of these molecules becomes random. On the other hand, the orientation of the cigar remains to be still intact. So that's why it actually breaks the rotational symmetry. And as you further increase the temperature, this is increasing the temperature. So this is synaptic, is in a low temperature. And then it becomes a nematic where they restore the translational symmetry, which is the positional molecules. And then as you further increase the temperature, it becomes the fluid where the position as well as the orientation of molecules becomes random. I don't know what to do with this. Okay. Because it's hard to see, so I have to rotate my head, and seems like it's not compatible with the position of mic. Anyway, so you can see the broken symmetries which characterize the different phases, and the question is whether we can do something like this in an electronic system where we don't have this cigar-type molecules, but just an electron. So we can actually characterize the different phases with different broken symmetry, just like the what we do with the liquid crystals. So you can think of having a solid phase where the position of electrons are becomes discrete, which is like a solid that we know. So solid phase can be considered as a phase with a broken translational and rotational symmetry. So you form some 90-degree rotational symmetry left in this picture. Of course, that's coming from the ionic potentials, but I'm talking about the solid, which is coming from the spontaneous broken symmetry, so coming from the interactions between the electrons. And then as you increase some either temperature or here specifically quantum fluctuations, that this crystal or solid can melt into a liquid where the position of electrons or rotation or some momentum of the electrons becomes isotropic. Question is, do we actually have the intermediate phase where we restore the symmetry one by one? So intermediate phase can be characterized by the synaptic and nematic phase, where the names originated from, you know, we borrowed from the liquid crystals. So synaptic phase, as you can see here, it's a snapshot of the electrons where you see that the density of electrons are sort of invariant if you move along the vertical axis, but if you move along the row axis, you see that the density is high on this high. Black spots becomes low in a white, and then high, low, and high. You can see that, as I said, this is a snapshot, so you shouldn't think this as a striped crystal, because you have some fluctuations where the stripes are allowed to move or fluctuate around the sum minima. Okay, and the nematic phase is the one that all the translational symmetry is restored, but on the other hand, rotational symmetry is still broken. So this is a snapshot of the picture where you see that the kineticity, or if you like, the momentum of the electron along the vertical axis is still remain to be high compared to the momentum, Fermi momentum along the x-axis or the horizontal axis. And then isotropic is the, all of the symmetry is all restored, and we end up with totally uniform Fermi liquid. Okay, possible examples for nematic phase has been discussed in this three compound. I don't think I know anything more than this, and we are looking for some other possibility. One of the possibility was discussed in our 2D electron gas under high magnetic field, where you see this quantum Hall effect. And this happens in a nuclear 9½. It's a very high field state. And then high temperature cuprate was actually, this discussion was actually motivated from the high temperature cuprate phenomena. And on the other hand, recently, the 327 ruthenate has signaled that this particular thematic phase may happen in this ruthenium compound. Okay, so as I said, in the high temperature cuprate was one of the big subjects which has brought a lot of problems, not only the physics problem as well as social problems. One of the camp has been, well, everybody was wanted to understand what is the generic phase diagram of the doped MOT insulator. Okay, so as you dope, then a lot of things happens, and the one camp has suggested that the it has to have a so-called stripes. So SMACD you can think as a kind of fluctuating stripes. As you increase the temperature, the crystal will melt eventually. This axis is some quantum fluctuations. SMACD become a Fermi liquid on the overdose side, and we know that there is a superconducting phase here, which might come as a bonus. But the generic phase has to be a crystal and then liquid. In the intermediate phase, it has to be SMACD, and then it become a nematic, which break only the rotational symmetry. Okay, so the picture of this, as I just want to remind you, crystal is like that, and then SMACD, and then nematic, and then isotropic. Those are drawn. Those are just, you know, draw by hands, and there is not much of rigorous mathematical calculations to show such a things might exist in some microscopic Hamiltonian. So our approach is, can you actually think about, because from here to there, from here to there, this is a strong coupling approach where you can see that there is a discrimination, so topological defect has to be introduced. It's a hard problem, obviously, for everyone. So shall we think about something simple? So let's approach from the weak coupling. This is the liquid. Think about the pneumatic. Luckily, that next to the isotropic liquid, so I can think of pneumatic as a broken symmetry of the Fermi liquid. Okay, so approaching from the left, and that'll, you know, give us some guide. So I said that let us consider pneumatic as a broken rotational symmetry. It's an instability of the Fermi surface, in other words. Then we can actually define an order parameter for pneumatic. Okay, I want to define order parameter, and if that order parameter is finite, then it'll have a pneumatic phase. So the question is how one can define a pneumatic order parameter which describes the rotational broken symmetry in an electronic system. Okay, so pneumatic order parameter is nothing but a quadrupole density. It's not quadrupole magnetic density. It's a quadrupole, just the charge density. So you can see these are something familiar to you, that the second quantization, you can see that the second derivative is involved. And the Qij is defined in a momentum space as a Pi hat, Pj hat. In the real space, it's nothing but a second derivative, but there is a minus sign in front, so there is an X and Y symmetry is obviously broken, or a 90 degree, you know, rotating from X to Y is broken if this is finite. This is coming from, again, a liquid crystal pictures. You can make the analog between the two where the cigar type can be understood that as the this angle, if that angle average over the whole system become finite, you can think of having orientation of all these cigars. So you can consider pneumatic as electron momentum is aligned or anti-aligned. So in other words, if I have a Fermi surface, so this is a metallic state because I still have the finite Fermi momentum. I don't have a gap on the Fermi surface. This is the isotropic Fermi surface. Consequence of the pneumatic order is very simple that I'll just squeeze the Fermi surface. Okay? So elongate one particular direction can be X or Y or can be anything. If you put it on a crystal, of course, they'll most likely elongate one of the X or Y and you have a two degenerate state, elongate along the X direction or Y direction. Okay, and then you can ask, okay, this is a Fermi surface dispersion. Is this new? Actually, it's nothing really new. It has been discussed, well, it had discussed long time ago by the person Pomalanchuk. It's called Pomalanchuk instability. It's 1958. Yep. Russian paper, JTP. Okay, so what he had considered is that asking, okay, What are the perturbations that makes the Fermi surface stable or unstable? So you can think of having a putting the energy begins from the Fermi liquid. You have an energy which can be modified by the some arbitrary change in the density. And that energy, this is a kinetic term, this is some interaction term. And if the energy change of this is positive for arbitrary change of the delta N, then the system is stable. If not, this is not going to be stable, and it has to, something has to happen. Okay, so he has considered that this Fermi surface, which is isotropic, and then if I want to have some distortion of the Fermi surface like that, then you can expand this P around the P naught, and then these are going to be an expansion term in a series of the spherical, you know, surface harmonics, which we know from a quantum mechanics of third year or second year. So you plug in there, and then energy can be decomposed into different angular momentum channel, and he can write down the stability of the Fermi surface in a different angle channel. So it's each L and M can be described as if this is positive, both of all of them are positive, then the system will remain as isotropic. If one of them become negative, then it'll distort, and depending on the which L component is negative, then the shape of the Fermi surface will be determined. The one that I show, like a squeezing, is L equal to two channel, like a D wave. This was revisited by many people, and one of the paper which I found interesting is that they have looked at the Hubbard model, the most common, well-known Hamiltonian by Metzner and Harbov. What they have found is that some kind of algae process, which I don't understand much about it. It's a big, you know, they have some equations, flow equations, put it into it, and then the black box give you something, and that something is telling us that the susceptibility as a function of the algae cutoff, which will be most singular, and they found for a given parameter space, which is T and T prime, T is the nearest neighbor, T prime is the next nearest neighbor, and then U, or chemical potential, they found that the most of the range, D wave superconductivity is most singular, so that's the one that might most likely realize in a system. And this is a phase diagram, U over T, and then this is the sum 4T prime minus mu, so they are changing a next nearest neighbor and then chemical potential, and they see that here is the mostly spin density wave, so antiferromagnet, as you know, and then these are the mostly a superconducting state. So D wave superconductivity was actually realized in this Hubbard model in this algae process. Additionally, what they have found is that not only the D wave superconductivity is singular, but also forward scattering becomes singular under the algae floor. Okay? So that meaning that one probably have to consider some Pomeloy Chomkin stability under the algae. So how do they do that? Well, it's simple in some sense. Well, writing down is simple. Solving this is not that simple. It's complicated. It's non-trivial. So they have to analyze the Fermi surface shape. So introduce some operator, which is the change of Fermi surface shift as a function or for the small momentum dependent chemical potential. So it's going to be a Kf and Kf prime function of this. And if eigenvalues of this operator all positive, the Fermi surface will remain as isotropic. If one of these become negative, then they'll find that Fermi surface will deform and that will become singular or instability, okay? And what they have found is that this PI, Pomeloy-Chomkin stability, actually happens. It's actually pretty one of the singular susceptibility, well, Pomeloy-Chomkin susceptibility, or this one is like a susceptibility. And then what they see that, in fact, it competes with superconductivity and then SDW. But they were not able to conclude that whether this is compete or they help or they hinders each other. None of those has been concluded in this study, so they just comment that it need further study to find their interplay. But I think that we understand better about how they interplay each other, which I don't think I'm going to talk today. I'll just leave it as open questions. Ginzburg-Landau analysis has been done later on, and what they have done is a very nice paper, introduced the Bode-Hamiltonian. So remember that I told you that this Q quadrupole density is an order primary. If I take this expectation value, if this becomes, let me call it delta, it's a 2-byte matrix. If I call that delta is finite, then you will squeeze the Fermi surface, and there is a delta prime, which is this expectation value in a momentum space. It's kx and ky, C dagger C. So this is like a type of the built-in Hamiltonian, because this is a kinetic term, and you can write down the interaction term into the order primary order prime, just like a BCS Hamiltonian that you can write down, and you know that superconductivity has to come up from the BCS. And this is a similar process that they have done it. And under the Landau Ginzburg Frenners, they have found that this is the all symmetry allowed term. Cubic term is not allowed, because if I change by 90 degree, delta change the sign, because squeezing this way is minus sign different. Because x and y, if I change, it's got a minus sign in front. So none of the odd powers of delta is allowed. Therefore, what they have said, that if the all is negative, then v is actually has to be positive, because if you expand it, this v is depending on some a, which is coming from the details of the Fermi surface topology, and this has to be a second-order transition, and Dematic is a quantum critical point which occurs inside a superconducting dome, and therefore it has something to do with the superconducting fluctuations, or TC and so on. So that was a kind of argument. On a lattice, we have already a lattice potential, so that already breaks the CIFO, well, begins with a CIFO instead of continuous symmetry. So Dematic has to be now, instead of C4, you break into the C2. So you break XY symmetry, 90-degree rotational symmetry. So in the scale lattice, for example, one has to write down, instead of KX square minus KY square, which is a continuum model, write down in a cos KX minus cos KY, which is reasonable, or which is something trivial. And then one does a similar thing that you can write down this effective interaction term, and then just do the mean field analysis, take the average, just like what Leon said, that you do this expectation value of this to be a delta. Delta prime is the off-diagonal component of this 2-by-2 matrix. And then if I do that, epsilon of k will be modified with delta and delta prime, and then solve itself consistently and see what happens. And what we found is that delta actually jumps as a function of chemical potential. This is t equal to 0. It doesn't matter whether T prime is finite, add a T double prime, T triple prime, whatever the T hoping that you add, it's always a post transition. And so we were curious that this doesn't have a cubic term, so why it has to be a post transition. So we decide to look at little details. So being in Canada, there are many, many things that are nice, but one nice thing is that you can actually attract the excellent student. So one of my excellent student, formal student, worked on all this analytical calculation and has found, without having any background, that has found that the long back, this Lipschitz transition was discussed, which is something, if you know it's simple, but if you don't know it, has to go through all these calculations on a page and page. It's basically the Fermi surface topology from electron-like or hole-like has to go through the Lipschitz transition, which is in the middle. Okay? If you look at the Frenners in a two-dimension, for example, it goes as a mu scale log mu. There is a singularity at mu goes to zero. Well, not in Frenners. If you take the derivative, you will see the singularity, and this is called Lipschitz transition. Most of the time, if you add an interaction which will open up the gap, this singularity is go away, because this log becomes a square root, so you don't have to worry about it. But in the Dematic, I told you this is a metallic state. We still have Fermi surface. There's no gap in any portion of the Fermi surface. So if you expand the Frenners, assuming that delta is smaller than bandwidth, which is reasonable enough, and mu is smaller than 2t, then this can be done. And there are some other terms which are not important to get rid of it. And you will find that instead of having this singularity removed, because it's a metallic state, this singularity just has where non-analyticity moved to the mu equal to plus minus 2 delta. That means that does this pneumaticity hinders the Lipschitz transition. And what we found, actually, the Frenners analysis has seen that this is the delta. I told you that the order parameter, well, by the way, off-diagonal delta prime is zero. You can see that this actually jumps in this side, which is this F here, which is isotropic, so delta is zero, which is the minima of the Frenners. As I move towards to the half field, moving along that direction, This is a place where the Bahnhof singularity occurs. Remember that the Lipschitz transition where this Fermi surface has to touch the zone boundary, so that's the called Bahnhof singularity, and that's where the Bahnhof singularity occurs, and that Bahnhof singularity with a finite delta will occur along these lines, and as these things become having a negative curvature here, what happens is that they develop the local minima around somewhere else, and then this is the D where this jump, because the free energy becomes identical at delta equals zero and finite delta. So that's what happens. And then, as I said, this negative curvatures occurs well below here. So instead of having second order transition, it's actually a first order transition, and that first order transition preempt the divergence of the susceptibility because the, as I said here, negative curvature near the zero order will actually occurs inside it. So it's preempted. So we understand why it has to be a first order transition. And Ginzburg-Landau is just telling us that this B has to be negative. It's a typo here. It has to be negative, so that means that we have to expand the high orders, and that's why it has to be a Fossil transition. Density of state has a very interesting behavior. So what it means, as I told you, that this one at the, without the delta is approaching through down to the mu from here to here. One has to go through the this Bahnhof singularity, Lipschitz transition, but once I allow to have that F2, which is an interaction, and allow to have the finite pneumaticity, then what happens is that instead of taking this one, they'll go through this Fermi surface, or that one. As I said, these are two degenerate states. Choose one of them spontaneously. And density of state says that, okay, at this point, we know that the density of state logarithmic singularity, instead of having this, it'll split into two peaks. So this one will give us a two peaks here. So at the chemical potential, we don't have the diverging density of state, and the separation between these two peaks is proportional to the pneumaticity. Okay, phase diagram at t equals zero as a function of different interactions, we found that these things are exponentially small, but it's still there, and this window is the one that the local minima occurs, so it preempts the susceptibility divergence, which is characterizing the second order transition. Finite temperature, well, because it's a Fermi surface involved, at the finite high temperature, it becomes a second order. Okay, in the presence of magnetic field, what happens is that magnetic field will add as a Zeeman term. And Zeeman term, you see that this is mu here, mu minus h for the up, mu plus h for the down, so h, if I fix the mu, h acts as a chemical potential. So that means, as I starting from here, as I increase the h, then an up Fermi surface will touch the Bahnhof singularity, so it has to develop the pneumaticity, so delta up is finite when you across, you know, the Bahnhof singularity. On the other hand, delta down here, which is getting away from the Bahnhof singularity because the h will shrink the down spins, and that's what it happens. So delta down is actually basically zero. And because it's a forced transition, what it means is that density of the up spin has to jump because this is a forced transition. Compressibility has to diverge, in other words. At the 2 point, where one is the pneumaticity occurs and the other one is where pneumaticity goes away, and if I take the difference between the two, n up minus n down, that's the magnetization, m. So m has to jump at the boundary between pneumatic and the isotropic. So pneumatic phase is bounded by the metamagnetic transition in the presence of a magnetic field. Does it have been seen here? So here I'll just, I don't have much time left, so let me give you some relevant materials where this has been actually detected. So one of the series of the compound, this is ruthenate, has this isostructure to the cuprate, n equal to 1, single layer has the superconductivity. This itself has a very own interesting phenomena, which I believe Catherine is going to talk about. And then 3D material, this one here, has the ferromagnetic transition at TC of this 160. The bilayer, so as a function of layer, they have a phase transition. Superconductor, well, it's a paramagnetic metal with a big ferromagnetic fluctuations, and then n equal infinity become a ferromagnetic metal. And if I look at the magnetic field and magnetization, as you decrease the temperature, it has some metamagnetic transition. Ultra, that's the sample that I show you was actually done in a little ago. And people are able to make even samples cleaner and cleaner. What they have found is that this metamagnetic transition, remember, there were only one of them, and that metamagnetic transition, where the, if you look at the resistivity, has a little anomaly at that metamagnetic transition. So apparently, magnetism and transport are linked. And what they have found is that if they make the sample cleaner and cleaner, that instead of having one anomaly, in fact, this resistivity is having a jump here and then jump down here. It's bounded by some little window there. If I just make the figure big enough, this is what it is, and this is a different temperature. And instead of having a one metamagnetic transition around here, they found that there are two metamagnetic transitions, one here and the other one here. Okay, so this between one, we suspect that, well, we propose that it has to be a pneumatic phase. And then later on, the experiment was done, and they actually do see that the magnet, well, a nice magnet, this is magnetoresistivity. Resistivity as a function of magnetic field. One direction along the X, let's say, the other direction along the Y direction, they do see that this resistivity has anisotropy by a factor of two. You know, pneumaticity has to have anisotropic transport because your Fermi surface is distorted. And I have shown you that we have used this toy Hamiltonian or effective Hamiltonian, if I like call it that way. On the other hand, we have recently, well, another excellent student had worked on this microscopic theory where we had to use the Harvard light interactions and invoke all of the, you know, orbitals. Well, Leon talks a lot about this orbital physics. We have to do similar things, you know, recoupling, and then T2G orbitals were all involved, and they all played an important role in forming the pneumatic phase and, you know, window between the magnetic field. Okay, high temperature cuprate. Well, this is still under the debate. A lot of things are going on. This is one of the neutron scattering data, although there are other neutron scattering data, which was done in Canada first. This one is done in Keimer. I don't know why I put this. Probably it's a prettier figure. Doesn't really mean that physics is better, I think. Here is, you can see that anisotropic neutron scattering patterns, which they claim that it has to be a pneumaticity, meaning that if I cut it off along this direction, you see a two peaks. If I cut it off along that direction, there is one peak. So that is telling us that there is some kind of anisotropy between X and Y direction. These are the details of that cutoff depending on different direction. This is a different temperature. It's a high temperature. It's gone, which is not the temperature where orthorhombic, you know, crystal structure is occurring. So it has to do with the spontaneous broken rotational symmetry. These are different, excitation energy. So this is 3 MeV. As you lower the frequency change, this is actually more pronounced. At a high energy excitations, it's actually more isotropic. So it has to do with the intrinsic. This is showing that it has to do with the more intrinsic phenomena in cuprate. Okay, so let me just summarize pneumatic. I hope that you will take this message with you. All you have to take is a pneumatic in the electronic system, meaning that it's a Fermi surface distortions which occurs spontaneously. It has to be an isotropic metal by definition. It actually accompanies the metamagnetic transition in the presence of magnetic field. If superconductivity and other parameters are coming in, then the situation is quite different. You can actually turn this first transition to the second order transition inside a superconducting dome. So that is coming from some interplay with other order parameters, such as the superconductivity, spin density wave, or charge density wave, and dot, 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 many, many of them. And we have found some interesting relation with some unified theory related. It's not totally that type, but this is some symmetry group which will help us to understand the interplay between them. And microscopic mechanism of pneumaticity, well, Christoph has a very nice paper. And there's another paper by some other people which was also done with some orbital degree of freedom. It's a little different, but I think that we are aiming the same focus. And then cuprate is still an open question, which is one of the difficult problems. Another thing is a relation to the quantum criticality. I told you that without the disorder, well, with a little disorder, then this was looking like a critical point. And instead of having a critical point, if you make the sample cleaner, it seems like this critical point is gone, and then you end up with a new phase, although it's very tiny. So I'll leave this open question with you, and then I will stop here. Thank you.